My name is Vasilios Kemmerlis. I'm from Columbia University, and today I'm going to talk about KGuard, which is a lightweight system for providing kernel protection against return-to-user attacks. And this is joint work with Georgios Portokalidis and my advisor, Angelos Kerumitis. So since this talk is about operating system security and specifically kernel security, I would like to start with providing the current state with kernel vulnerabilities. What's the state of the art in kernel exploitation? And what exactly are the return-to-user attacks that we're targeting in this work? So as you can see in the graph, the number of distinct kernel vulnerabilities identified throughout the years has been increased a lot. And for example, before 2000, we had less than 10 bugs, kernel bugs identified throughout the year, whereas in 2010, we had more than 200. And speaking about 2010, Linux alone had more than 140 CV numbers assigned for kernel bugs. And out of those bugs, we had 12 bugs that could be for which we had publicly available privilege escalation exploits. 13 of them could be triggered remotely, and we had other interesting stuff, such as bugs that could leak kernel memory, others that could be used to bypass authentication or authorization, perform denial of service attacks, and so on. So the bottom line here is that kernel attacks are becoming more and more common, and this is true because the kernel is a highly valued asset. It's responsible for the security of the whole operating system. It has a huge attack surface, but most importantly, to my opinion, the kernel attacks are becoming more common because the exploitation of userland processes has become harder throughout the years. And this is true because we had various security mechanisms for mitigating exploits, and these mechanisms have found their ways into the code bases of commodity operating systems, which means that nowadays, if someone manages to find a bug in a user process, then he also needs to find a way to get through all these things there, such as canaries, ASLR, and so on. So regarding kernel exploitation now, traditionally, kernel exploits worked in a similar way to userland exploits. So in both cases, we start with a bug in kernel space that allows the attacker to corrupt kernel memory. And then the attacker tries either to inject his own code in kernel space and execute it, or perform the attack in a rogue fashion. Now, in this work, we're targeting a slightly different type of attacks that we named return-to-user attacks, and we came with that name by observing the exploitation pattern followed by the most recent kernel exploits. And in these attacks, although they start with the same with the same underlying bug, the exploitation pattern is different, since the attacker, instead of trying to execute the code that he injected in kernel space, instead he redirects execution back to user space and starts executing code from there. So these attacks are against kernels that have a shared address space layout, and they work by overwriting, as I said before, control data with user space addresses. And for those who are paying attention to the news regarding kernel exploits, last week there was an exploit that led into privilege escalation in Linux. It was exploiting a bug in the NVIDIA graphics card driver, and it worked by following that particular pattern. So the reason that these attacks work is because there is a weak separation between the kernel space and the address space when it's shared. The user space is restricted using hardware features such as the memory management unit and the CPU modes from accessing the kernel, but when the kernel is running, he has complete and unrestricted access to the whole address space. And this is, of course, because the kernel needs to interact with the user process. However, the attacker in that model has the vantage point of completely controlling the user space part. And by completely controlling that part, I mean that he can control both the contents of the user space memory as well as the permissions to those pages. So what we propose here is a system that protects against that type of attacks. We call it KGuard, and it's a defensive mechanism that builds upon inline monitoring and code diversification. It's a cross-platform solution. It works in various architectures, since more and more of them have the same issue, and it also works with various operating systems, because these attacks are not only an issue in Linux, but the BSDs have the same problem as well, and so on. So K-Guard builds, as I said before, upon inline monitoring and the code diversification. And as far as the inline monitoring is concerned, we use something which we named control flow assertions, which are essentially inline guards that are injected in the kernel text during compile time. And what these checks are doing is that they're verifying that every exploitable control flow transfer and exploitable control flow transfers are computed branches are always remain inside the address space of the kernel. So as the figure in the right shows, we go before every exploitable branch and we instrument that branch with a small check that verifies the target of the branch. Now, if the branch goes to an address inside the kernel, then the execution continues. Whereas if it is not, then we override the branch with the address of our own violation handler, which was also injected inside the kernel space during compilation, which handles the violation. Now, this is an example of how a control flow assertion looks like. Here we're trying to confine an indirect call through a register, and we instrument that instruction with three additional instructions that essentially compare the contents of the register with the base address of the kernel. If the register points to user space, we override the register, and we assign to the register the address of the violation handler. Now, in case of an indirect call, for example, through a memory location, the instrumentation is a little bit more expensive. The red part shown there, it's similar to the previous one. But whenever we're branching through a memory location, we need to do two checks, not only one. First, we need, similarly to before, we need to check that the branch target is in kernel space, but we also need to check that the effective address that the branch target is stored is also in kernel space. And this is because whenever we have an expression like the call operand there, where the branch target is read from the memory location pointed by EBX and the offset 50, if the attacker controls the EBX register, then he can trick the kernel into loading the branch target from user space memory. So again, although he doesn't trick the kernel into branching directly to user space, he affects the branch target by tricking the kernel into loading an address that he wants. In many cases, since this instrumentation is needs additional one additional register in order to do that comparison, we might not be able to have three registers in the respective instrumentation routine, so we have to do some spilling as well. However, there are cases of CFAM guards where we can optimize, and these cases are indirect branches through memory locations that we know that they reside in kernel space. Here, for example, the call instruction, although it's an indirect call, we can statically verify that the address that the branch is loaded belongs to kernel, so we can avoid the first part of the check that I described before, and therefore have, again, only three instructions to confine that that particular case. However, the previous technique provides protection against return to user attacks only if the kernel, if the attacker partially controls a computed branch target. And by partially controlling, I mean that if he has only the ability to, say, overwrite with a particular value the branch target, or if he has the ability only to zero out parts of the of function pointer, let's say, then the previous technique is sufficient. However, if we assume that the attacker has the ability to overwrite branches with arbitrary values, then the previous scheme can be bypassed similarly to the way that is shown in the figure in the right. So there, the attacker might be able to find two branches that he can reliably control and overwrite the first branch with the address of the second branch and the second branch with the user space address. And in that case, the first control flow assertion will say everything is okay because the branch points into another instruction in kernel space. But the second control flow assertion will be completely bypassed, and thus the second branch will jump to user space. And we call this type of branching a bypass trampoline because it works like a trampoline where by chaining branch instructions, someone can go to user space. So in order to defend against this thing, we have a countermeasure which we call code inflation. And the main idea here is to reshape the kernel's text area by inserting random NOP sleds at the beginning of the text and before every control flow assertion. And the end effect of this instrumentation is that the actual location of each indirect control transfer is randomized per build, of course. And the effect is cumulative because every random NOP sled pushes all the rest instructions to higher memory addresses. So again, in the figure in the right, if the attacker tries now to do the same thing, he will either most probably jump into the NOP sled, thus sliding into control flow assertion 2, which will prevent the branching to user space, or he might branch to a completely irrelevant instruction, thus taking a kernel ops after some executing some instructions. Now, the important assumption here is that we assume the secrecy of the kernel text. So we assume here PROPEL file system privileges and also harden DMESS and the PROC file system. So the attacker shouldn't be able to leak kernel addresses through PROC, for example, so as to get an idea of what's the layout of the kernel. Although this might seem a little bit restrictive, the latest Ubuntu distribution has already incorporated these countermeasures. And as far as I know, other vendors have plans to do the same thing in future releases. However, the problem with the previous techniques is that both of them are implemented at compile time. So whenever the kernel is randomized during using CFAs and the code inflation, it's randomized per build. So if someone takes the same binary and then distributes it to, say, 10 machines, if in one machine the attacker finds a way to let's say read the binary of the kernel, he has more or less knowledge about the layout of the kernel in all other machines as well. So in order to protect against that, we have another countermeasure which we call it CFA motion. And the idea here is to relocate the actual addresses of the branches and the respective control flow assertions at boot time. So whenever the kernel is booted, we take the control flow assertions and we relocate them inside the NOP sled, thus preventing the attacker from being able to chain branches together so as to finally branch into the user space. Regarding the implementation of KGuard, we implemented it as a GCC plugin. We didn't change at all the GCC compiler. It hooks to the backend part of the compiler, and specifically right before the RTL intermediate representation is lowered to machine code. And it's made up to 1,000 lines of code in C. Regarding the evaluation, we used a relatively a new host. We used the latest Debian distribution. The NOP sleds were randomly selected between 2 and 20 NOP instructions. Every experiment that you're going to see in the following slides was repeated 10 times, and whenever you're going to see an error bar, it corresponds to 90% confidence interval. Before getting into the numbers, we also run, of course, an effectiveness evaluation. For those 8 bugs, there are publicly available privilege escalation exploits for Linux, and we took those exploits, and of course, we ran them on top of the respective kernel and on top of the same kernel instrumented with KGuard, and as you might expect, we, in all cases, we did manage to detect and prevent the respective attack. Next, as far as the performance is concerned, we ran a set of micro benchmarks. In this scenario, we have two kernels, a kernel which is the vanilla one, and the same kernel instrumented with KGuard, and we ran on top of the KGuard instrumented kernel various user level applications, so as to see what is the impact of KGuard when, from the perspective of an application running on top of a system protected with it. We ran a kernel build, and we measured the time to build the kernel with the time utility. We also ran MySQL, and we used the SQL bench to measure its performance, and we also used the Apache bench for Apache. Now, the impact of KGuard in all real-life applications was negligible. It was less than 1%, which means that this is the overhead observed from the perspective of the application running on top of KGuard protected kernel. Next, we also did some micro benchmarks. We used LMBench in these scenarios. And in this figure, we measure the bandwidth of various IPC utilities. So in the x-axis, we have INET sockets, Unix sockets, and pipes. And on the y-axis, we measure the bandwidth in megabytes per second. The black bars correspond to the vanilla kernel, and the gray bars to the same kernel protected with KGuard. And since we're measuring bandwidth, higher is better. And the difference between the two bars gives the overhead of KGuard. In x86, the average slowdown was 6%. Whereas in x86-64, the slowdown was 6.6%. We also did some latency measurements so as to see what is the additional latency imposed in various important system calls. Here, the results are from x86. In the x-axis, we have the various system calls that we tested, such as read, write, select, socket pipe, and so on. And on the y-axis, we have the latency measured in microseconds. Here, lower is better. And again, the black bars correspond to the vanilla kernel, and the gray bars correspond to the same kernel instrumented with KGuard. And the difference between the two bars gives the additional latency imposed by our technique. In x86, the average overhead was 11.4%. And this, for the same experiment in x86-64, the overhead was 10.3%. Now, finally, we also measured the translation overhead of KGuard, which is the time needed from our plugin to instrument the intermediate representation of KGuard, of GCC, sorry, and perform the CFA-based confinement and the code inflation techniques. And we also measured the increase in the kernel image and the kernel module size. Regarding the build time, the increase in the build time was negligible. Whereas as far as the size is concerned, in x86 we had an increase in 3.5%, and in x86-64, 5.6%. And this was due to the additional NOP instructions injected. So to conclude, I presented KGuard, which is a lightweight and versatile mechanism for protecting against return to user attacks. It builds upon inline monitoring and code diversification, the two core techniques that we used. It's a cross-platform solution in terms that it can compile every architecture in any architecture that GCC supports, and it can also protect different operating systems, again, as long as GCC is the compiler that is used in order to compile the kernels of those operating systems. It's non-intrusive, it has low overhead, and it's freely available. You can take it from the URL in the bottom of the slide. And with that, I can take questions.
Hey, Lior from Intel, thank you. I have a question. So Intel architecture, and I think ARM as well, has all sorts of mechanisms for protection of jumping from ring 0 to ring 3, right? Can you comment why you couldn't use those, or what these features could not give you that you wanted?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I think that the feature that you're referring to is called SMEP, and it's an upcoming feature for making sure that whenever the code is executing in ring 0, it cannot branch to every other page in the memory which doesn't have the supervisor bit set.
No.
So this thing, first of all, it is included.
Yeah, I said no.
Okay, so.
I don't.
All right.
So the Intel has two protections. One is in segmentation, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it goes back to the day, you know, the original days of the x86. And I know that segmentation is, you know, not fully utilized in 64-bit mode, but the protection checks are still done. And segmentation is partially actually usable in 64-bit mode for two registers. Mm-hmm. And page tables always provide, well, I'm not sure if always, but definitely now, provide protection. So you can mark certain pages as user and certain pages as supervisor, and you can also specify whether you want to enable the protection that prevents supervisor code from jumping into user mm-hmm. pages. So those protections exist. I'm not talking about future stuff.
Okay, so about those protections, yeah, I mean, you could do that as well, but that means that you need to rewrite the code of the operating system, or to patch it, to rewrite it and patch it so as to utilize these things. Linux, for example, uses flat address spaces. Whenever you're, it doesn't matter whenever you're getting back into the kernel space. Now, there is a patch for Linux that uses that. It's the PAX hardening patch. And these guys are essentially, in x86, they utilize the segmentation unit, whereas in x86-64, since the segmentation unit is, it's more or less not there, they do other stuff. But the problem is that every time you need to protect a new operating system, you have to rewrite its code in order to do that thing. Whereas with our technique, you can use the compiler and automatically instrument the code for performing the respective protection. So
I think
both of them are, I think that they restrict the address space. Both techniques restrict the address spaces. Now, you can either use the hardware and go through the code and patch it, or you can use this and do it automatically.
Okay, thank you.
Rick Vero. So I assume the difference in micro benchmarks between the 32-bit and 64-bit versions have to do with the amount of space you're using, right? The number of words of memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So did you try tuning so you could make your sled smaller? How important is the size of the sled if you wanted to make the performance look alike? Could you use, 10 no-ops rather than 20 no-ops?
Mm-hmm. Well, the more no-ops you're using, the more entropy you're going to have on the randomized kernel. Now, in our experiment, we used, as I said in the beginning, a size of between 0 and 20, because this gives mostly 10 bits of entropy for every control, for every branch that we're trying to instrument. We didn't run any extensive benchmarks with various NOP sleds so as to see how this thing scales and how it becomes different. But I think that for 64-bit address spaces, having a space overhead of, let's say, 5%, it's something that someone can pay. Compared to the fact that most of the kernel, at least, address space is not utilized.
Sure. Okay. Thanks.
Ibrexi Perez, ANSI. It's just a precision. In 64-bit mode, PAX actually use a kernel plugin, a GCC plugin for its kernexec feature, so it's basically already done.
It's a little bit different what PAX is doing in the x86 64 case. What it does is that it goes before every branch and asserts only one bit, because it relies on the fact that the address space has a canonical layout. Now the problem is that it doesn't do any randomization. So if the similarly to the NOP sleds that we're inducing before the computed branches. So if you don't have that, it might be possible to say, okay, you overwrite a return. The return address of a function with another branch that branches to user space, similar to the attack, to this attack. So again, you need to have some randomization before the branches so as to make sure that the attacker cannot chain together branches so as to go to user space. And in x86, since you have non-overlapping instructions, you can go to and execute an instruction, say that it's in the middle of another instruction, you might be able to find jumps to user space that are overlapped. So again, you need to have, that's my opinion, to have some randomization to protect against these things.
Yeah. Okay.
Vishwat from the University of Texas at Dallas. I just had a question. Do you do any kind of guards for returns?
Mm-hmm. We instrument the return instructions as well with the same logic. This one.
Any other questions? If not, let's thank speaker again.